headlines this hour. Polish governing Liberals candidate Bronislaw Komorowski wins presidential vote. Two French ministers resign after rows over spending taxpayer money. NATO says more US-led troops have been killed in eastern Afghanistan. And Israeli ministers vote to continue settlement activities on Palestinian land.
It's 2:30 in the morning here in the capital, Tehran. You're watching another bulletin of World News on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. Starting off in Poland, where Bronislaw Komorowski has won the country's runoff presidential vote.
Well, the election was held after President Lech Kaczynski was killed in a plane crash in April. Partial results show Komorowski won nearly 51% of the vote. His opponent, the late president's twin brother, secured more than 49% of the ballots cast. Jarosław Kaczynski has already conceded defeat and congratulated Komorowski's victory. The new president has vowed to promote pro-market reforms and end Poland's military mission in Afghanistan in 2012. Final results will be announced on Monday.
Two French ministers have resigned following recent corruption charges brought against them. French President Nicolas Sarkozy's office has issued a statement accepting the resignation of Alain Joyandet and Christian Blan. Sarkozy and his Prime Minister François Fillon had urged the two ministers to step down. Charges against Joyandet, who's been the French Development Minister since 2008, include spending of more than $150,000 to hire a private jet back in March. Blan, who's been serving as a junior minister, is accused of spending about $15,000 out of taxpayer funds on Cuban cigars. A recent poll shows 2 out of 3 French voters consider their politicians to be mostly corrupt. Well, our correspondent Mark Vautier from Paris gave us more details about the corruption charges in the French government and the resignation of the two ministers.
All of this comes as France is, of course, labouring under an enormous deficit and national debt, and French workers are still feeling the pinch of the economic crisis. So when they tendered their resignation today, Sarkozy accepted. That money spent on cigars is about half the annual salary of an average French worker. So let's just take into account that private rented jet again. There was a terrible, terrible disaster in Haiti, that earthquake in January 2012. So in the minds of the public, the money spent on that private jet could have been given to Haitians for relief efforts.
Clashes in eastern Afghanistan have left a number of U.S.-led foreign troops casualties. A NATO statement says 9 of its troops have been killed or wounded. It gives no other details. The clash with the Taliban militants reportedly happened in the province of Kunar. A spokesman for Taliban has claimed 15 foreign troops were killed in the fierce gun battle. The incident comes as U.S. General David Petraeus has formally taken over command of American and NATO forces in the country.
Now, an Israeli ministerial committee has rejected a key bill on giving Tel Aviv the power to block extensions to a settlement freeze in the occupied West Bank. The draft legislation would have given the parliament a veto over any extension of the 10-month freeze that is due to expire in September. This came a day before Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu heads to Washington for talks with U.S. President Barack Obama. Last year, Tel Aviv, under U.S. pressure, announced the temporary freeze. Tel Aviv's settlement activities are seen as the major obstacle to the U.S.-backed peace talks between Israel and Palestine.
Investigation into claims of child abuse by Belgian clergy is reaching boiling point following the recent raids of the Catholic Church in Belgium. Authorities are now investigating death threats made against witnesses and magistrates tied to the probe. Now, the threats have been made to witnesses who gave information to the police and to the magistrates who may end up judging the case. So far, the authorities have refused to say who's making the threats. Last month, police raided a meeting of Catholic bishops as part of a probe into allegations of child abuse by priests in Belgium. The allegations are the latest in a long line of similar cases that have hit the Catholic Church in Europe and North America.
Four Canadian journalists covering protests during the G20 summit in Canada have filed complaints with Ontario's police watchdog. Amy Miller, one of the four journalists, has told of her ordeal in police detention. She says she was physically assaulted and was threatened with gang rape.
I was in a cell with 25 other young women for approximately 13 hours. Throughout the time that I was detained, I was told many statements that I find repulsive and completely inappropriate, and what I view as threats. I was told I was going to be raped. I was told I was going to be gangbanged. I was told that they were going to make sure that I was never going to want to act as a journalist again by making sure that I would be repeatedly raped while I was in jail. When I was in the detention center, I saw numerous young women who were completely strip-searched, who weren't strip-searched by officers, who were strip-searched by male officers.
Well, the journalists were arrested as they were covering a demonstration in front of a hotel in downtown Toronto. Most demonstrations during the G20 summit were peaceful, but others turned violent when protesters tried to enter a convention center. Canadian police were accused by local and international news agencies of using excessive force against protesters.
You're watching World News here on Plus TV. Time for a quick reminder of the headlines this hour. Polish governing Liberals candidate Bronisław Komorowski wins presidential vote. Two French ministers resign after rows over spending taxpayers' money. NATO says more U.S. troops have been killed in eastern Afghanistan. And Israeli ministers vote to continue settlement activities on Palestinian land.
Still to come here on Press TV, the departure of Grand Ayatollah Sayyid Mohammed Hossein Fazlullah. Stay tuned.
Despite almost three decades of investigations and international pleas for information, Iran is still at a loss as to whether four of its nationals are dead or alive. Journalists were kidnapped on July the 4th, 1982 in Lebanon. From Tehran, Press TV's Nargis Mobalaghi reports on why Iran believes they're alive and incarcerated in Israel.
Where are Ahmed Mutawassilian, Sayed Mohsen Mousavi, Taghi Rastegar Mogaddam and Kazem Akhavan? Are they dead or alive? It's the question that's kept their families awake at night for 28 long years. On July 4, 1982, they were abducted during the Israeli invasion of Beirut by Lebanon's Falange, a branch of the Lebanese Forces Party led by Samir Jaja. Jaja has claimed that the three diplomats and a journalist were killed shortly after being captured, a claim echoed by Tel Aviv. But Iran disagrees.
Until now, we have obtained useful information that tells us that the diplomats were temporarily in the custody of the Falange. With the support of the Zionists, they were taken to Israel. Iran's foreign ministry has taken many steps since they disappeared, following up through the international bodies like the UN, ICRC, the EU, and parliaments, NGOs, and human rights groups, also through bilateral measures with the help of Syria and Lebanon.
As commemorations took place across the city.
The status of these four Iranians remains a mystery here in Iran. To mark the 28th anniversary of their kidnapping, this book has been published. The author chronicles from July 6, 1982, right up to the present day, and he explains why he believes that these four are still alive and, in fact, that they are in Israel.
I spoke to the author of the book, now translated into English, about how his research led him to make such a conclusion.
The Israelis changed their stance from 1985. Before, they said they knew nothing, but then they announced that if Iran gives information about their pilot, they will give information about the diplomats. This would be repeated whenever negotiations and swaps were going on in Lebanon. Also, when three Israeli prisoners were released, one said he had shared a prison cell with the Iranian diplomats.
The last time the four were heard of was in June 2008, when Lebanon's Hezbollah said it had received an Israeli report about the diplomats. The UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for an end to the mystery, but in Iran, such calls are seen as far from adequate.
Three main mistakes have been made. First, the abduction and kidnapping of the diplomats in the first place. These were diplomats who, according to international law, had immunity. Second is the facts are still being hidden. No means to communicate has been provided, nor to have their names registered by the International Committee of the Red Cross. The third is the silence of the international community and organizations.
So the questions continue. 28 years on, what happened to these four Iranians on July 4, 1982? And where are they now? Their families are still waiting for their answers and have never given up hope of seeing them again. Nargis Mubalaghi, Press TV, Tehran.
Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman says the U.S. is responsible for the abduction of Iranian national Shahram Amiri.
Rami Mehmanparast says Tehran is still waiting for Washington's response on the issue.
After the video of Shahram Amiri was posted, the U.S. State Department spokesman said Washington had received the documents delivered by Iran to the Swiss embassy in Tehran. He said Washington would review the issue and would respond. We are still awaiting for an answer from the U.S. State Department. They should be held responsible for the Iranian national and his safe return to Iran.
Shahram Amiri went missing while on the Hajj pilgrimage in Saudi Arabia in June 2009. Mehmanparast said Iran will spare no effort to support Amiri and other Iranian nationals who are in custody outside their homeland. He also said another Iranian national, Ali Reza Askari, has also been abducted by the U.S.
Ayatollah Muhammad Hussein Fadlullah passed away on July 4, 2010 in a southern Beirut suburbs of Harat Hraik. The Ayatollah devoted his life to Islam.
Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Hussein Fadlullah was born November 16, 1935, to a Lebanese family in the holy city of Najaf in Iraq. The Ayatollah studied Islamic sciences in Najaf prior to moving to Lebanon in 1952, when he was only 17 years old. During the following years in Lebanon, he gave lectures, wrote many books, and founded several Islamic schools and orphanages. Ayatollah Fadlullah also established the Mubarak Association for Orphans, and through this association he established a women's cultural center to promote equality between men and women.
Sayyid Fadlullah was determined to fight anything which tarnished the image of Islam. He gave education its role in religion. This especially included the educational field of medicine. Sayyid Fadlullah wanted to present the religion via education and was well known for his support of a state which showed no discrimination between Sunni and Shia, nor between any religion or race.
On March 8, 1985, Ayatollah Muhammad Hussein Fadlullah was the victim of an assassination attempt outside of his house in Beirut. The blast killed 80 people and wounded as many as 256. However, Ayatollah Fadlullah miraculously survived unharmed. According to American journalist Bob Woodward, CIA Director William Casey was behind the attempted assassination of the Grand Ayatollah. Mr. Woodward also implied that the funding of the failed assassination attempt came from Saudi Arabia.
One of Sayyid Fadlullah's main concerns was how to confront world hegemony and how to confront Israel. He was recently asked, "When will you be at peace?" He answered, "I will only be at peace when the Zionist entity falls."
Grand Ayatollah Hussein Fadlullah was also known for his opposition to U.S. foreign policy and believed that America aspires to impose hegemony on the rest of the world. He also called on the international community to boycott American and Israeli products in order to act as a deterrence against their war on Muslims and Islam. The Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Hussein Fadlullah died on July 4, 2010, at the age of 74, due to internal bleeding. In the suburb of Harat Hraik, where the Ayatollah preached at the Al Hassanan Mosque, black banners were hung in mourning, and women wept openly in the streets. Serena Shim reporting for Press TV, Beirut.
Pakistani security forces arrested at least 12 suspected people over deadly attacks on a prayer site in the eastern city of Lahore. Police officials say huge quantities of explosive material and weapons has also been seized from the suspects. The arrests come 3 days after a series of explosions killed 44 people and wounded more than 190 others in Lahore. The city has been the target of many attacks in recent months. Militant attacks in Pakistan have claimed the lives of hundreds of people this year alone.
U.S. Vice President Joseph Biden is holding meetings with Iraqi politicians to break the country's political deadlock. Biden arrived in Baghdad on Saturday. He has already met with Iraq's former Prime Minister Iyad Alawi and is expected to meet with Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki later on Sunday. He is also to hold talks with President Jalal Talabani on Monday. An inconclusive election 4 months ago and the failure to form Iraq's next government have raised questions about U.S. plans to end combat operations in August. Biden says he is optimistic Iraqi politicians will form a government soon.
The U.S. Secretary of State is in Armenia seeking to ease tensions between Yerevan and Baku over the disputed region of Nagorno-Karabakh. Hillary Clinton arrived in Armenia from Azerbaijan, where she held talks with President Ilham Aliyev. In Baku, Clinton said reaching a peace deal on Karabakh was top priority and that Washington would be ready to help. Regional tensions have risen in recent months after talks on the status of the region stalled in April. Baku accuses the United States of siding with Armenia over the dispute. Nagorno-Karabakh broke away from Azerbaijan after a brief but bloody war in 1990 and is now under Armenian control.
Two Russian troops have been killed after their vehicle comes under attack by gunmen in west of region of Ingushetia. Local security officials said the attackers opened fire early Monday morning on two vehicles of Russian soldiers in the Nazran region. Five other soldiers were wounded in the attack. Russia has been struggling to contain the violence in the volatile North Caucasus.
Mexicans are voting to elect governors and mayors in elections marred by bloodshed. The elections have been overshadowed by the gang-related murders and intimidation of candidates. The raging drug violence and the weak state of the economy are expected to weigh in on the vote. President Felipe Calderón's popularity has slumped in recent months and his ruling conservatives are expected to take a beating at the polls. The country's main opposition, the Institutional Revolutionary Party, is set to make huge gains ahead of presidential polls in 2012.
Skimming operations have resumed in Louisiana to clean up the oil spill after a five-day shutdown due to Hurricane Alex. Officials say high seas are still preventing skimming vessels from resuming operations in three southern states of Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida. Skimming was suspended on Tuesday as Tropical Storm Alex, which later became the first Atlantic hurricane of the year, entered the Gulf of Mexico. It's been 76 days since an explosion at a BP-operated oil rig in the Gulf of Mexico caused the biggest environmental disaster in U.S. history. Every day, tens of thousands of barrels of oil gush from the ruptured well into the water, but the energy giant and the U.S. administration have so far failed to contain the massive oil spill.
Officials and witnesses in Somalia say at least 12 people have been killed in clashes and a bomb attack in the capital Mogadishu. Seven civilians died in an exchange of fire when clashes erupted between Al-Shabaab fighters and African Union forces on Sunday. Somali Information Ministry confirmed the fighting. In a separate attack, five people, including three government troops, were killed when a roadside bomb hit the car of a senior finance ministry official in the south of the capital. However, a local official said the targeted official escaped the attack.
Reports say Saudi Arabia has set up a military base to bolster terrorist activities in Iraq. The base is said to be located in a region near the Saudi border with Jordan. Informed sources say the terrorist agents are being trained there by senior Saudi military officers. Earlier in May, an Iraqi news network reported that Riyadh was funding al-Qaeda in Iraq. Some other reports accuse Saudi Arabia of sponsoring anti-Iran group called VMKO. The group is considered a terrorist organization by much of the international community.
And that was our latest headlines here on Press TV News. Do make sure to log on to our website, though, presstv.com, for the latest.